Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
So as we continue moving through the book of Proverbs, go ahead and grab your Bibles and turn to Proverbs chapter 25. If you remember, we just finished the wrapping up of a section where we went through and saw the most important of Solomon's sayings for his son, what we would call the 30 wise sayings. There were some additional sayings of the wise that we covered in our last session, but now, as we turn to Proverbs 25, notice what verse 1 says. It says, "These are the Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied." So again, we are now in a continued and prolonged list of wise sayings. There's nearly 150 of these Proverbs here, and they were written by Solomon. They were copied by Hezekiah. And if you go back and look at the Hebraic history, you know, Hezekiah was a good king of Judah. He lived approximately 200 years after Solomon had died, and what he really wanted to do was to bring revival to Judah. So as part of that impetus to bring that revival, he wanted to make sure that his people and his leaders were exposed to these wise sayings from what some consider to be the greatest king in Israel history. So what we see here in chapters 25 through the end of chapter 29 are these sayings. So we're going to start another small series within a series that I'm going to call here the collection. Now, before we jump into this, I want to make sure that you understand we are not going to cover all 150 of these proverbs. We are going to take them in sections, and we're going to unpack certain ones that are of particular value to us in the modern day. So in verses 2 through 7, we see some things that pertain to kings, that pertain to rulers, to leaders that are important for us. So look at verse 2. It says, "It is the glory of God to conceal things, but the glory of kings is to search things out." In other words, if you are a leader, if you are a ruler, then it really should become your desire and your heart to grow, to learn, and not just to lay back and to just let others come and serve you, but you are the one that sets the stage. So you are the one that needs to be learning and growing. Look at verse 3. It says, "As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away the dross from the silver, and the smith has material for a vessel." This whole process of growing means that we find things in our own lives that we need to get rid of, and we do so. Why? Because that adds more value to others. But look at the latter part of verse 6. It says, "Do not put yourself forward in the king's presence or stand in the palace of the great, in the place of the great, for it is better to be told, 'Come up here,' than to be put lower in the presence of a noble." There's a similar saying that we have touched on later or early on, but what this really does for us is it reminds us for the need of humility. Rather than assuming that you are the best, rather than assuming that others should give you honor, you go in humble. And then if that honor is given to you, then it is well-deserved honor. But if you go in prideful, if you go in seeking and expecting others to give you the things that you think you deserve, but then you don't receive it, you are the one that is humiliated and your pride is crushed. Verses 8 through 14 shift from things pertaining to kings to things that pertain to words. Look at verse 11 here. "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver." We need to make sure that we use our words to encourage others, that we use our words to build up and teach others rather than what we do more often than anything else, and that's to cut people down. In our lives, if you have children, how often do you tell them what they did wrong? A lot, right? But how often do you tell them what they have done right? I'm going to let that just sit there because we know the answer. Telling our children what they've done wrong far outweighs telling them what they've done right. But that also applies into a work situation as well. If you're a leader, how often do you praise people for a job well done compared to correcting them for a job poorly done? This aspect of the apples, you know, the word fitly spoken is like an apple of gold in the setting of silver. That gold will stand out in the silver. And that's why it's important for us to be able to have the right words at the right time. Verse 12 says, like a gold or an ornament of gold. Excuse me, let me try that again. Like a gold ring or an ornament of gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. This goes back to a tie earlier with humility. If we are listening and we are being corrected for things that we have done wrong, those words that are being spoken to us at the right time, the value is tremendous. Unfortunately, the only way we're going to get better is to fail. The only way that we're going to get better is to reach a point that we go to someone, I made a mess of this, can you help me clean this up? But we don't like to go through that. And the last thing that I will mention here in this section is verse 14. It says, like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of a gift he does not give. Think of, we've all got these folks. So think of those that have come to you like, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you this. And they never do. But then start telling others, hey, I'm going to give him this. So they're saying these things to make themselves look good. But as the imagery that Solomon uses, it's like clouds and wind without rain. It looks promising, but it brings nothing. We've been on the receiving end of those, right? So don't ever do that to others. If you tell someone there's a gift coming your way, give them the gift. Verses 15 through 27 is the largest section here. And really, this is just a compilation of miscellaneous statements. There's not really a way to tie them together in an outline. So we'll go through just a couple of these. Look at verse 15. With patience, a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue will break bone. Very simply, patience and kind words, that's what wins the day. If you go in and you just start being a bull in a china shop, you're going to lose people in a hurry. But this is the critical component. We want the quick fix. So if I go in and I'm yelling and I'm boisterous and I'm angry, that's going to give me what I want. No, that's actually going to turn people away from you. So evaluate your actions in the long-term view, not just in the short-term. I love verse 16. We're going to skip down to verse 27 as well here because they fit together. It says, if you have found honey, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit. Then verse 27 is very similar. It says, it is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glorious to seek one's glory. You know, we recently visited the Outer Banks here in North Carolina and went to a local bakery called the Orange Blossom, and they sell these wonderful things called apple uglies. The only way I had to describe it is there's this compilation of dough and cinnamon and apples all together that's about the size of my two-year-old's head. These things are phenomenal. But you can only eat so much. And then you're just like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. So what Solomon is saying here is don't overdo it. Too much sweet changes you. And I'm not just talking about the imagery here where he has of someone throwing it up. If you are only accustomed to the riches and the wealth and the sweet things of the world, it will change you and your outlook on others. You need to guard yourself against that, particularly in this world that seems to value things and money and possessions and prestige and power more than anything else. Look at verse 19. It says, trusting in a treacherous man in a time of trouble is like a bad tooth or a foot that slips. If you've ever had a tooth that hurts, it is non-stop pounding in your mouth. That, in essence, is what he is saying here. That is a beautiful image. That if you place your trust in the wrong folks, when you need them, all you're going to get is a pounding within your head. Now, let me flip this another way. And let me ask you this question. If that's the case of us putting our trust in others, are you the treacherous person? My friends, don't be that way. Make sure that your word is your bond. Verses 20 through 22. It says, whoever sings songs to a heavy heart is like one who takes off a garment on a cold day and like vinegar on soda. Thinking, what in the world? Keep going. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. I'm going to give you a very simple summary right here. Your actions acknowledge who you are. If you have an enemy, and you see that he is hungry, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to let him starve. He is my enemy. That shows who you are. But if you have an enemy that is struggling, and you reach out to support and offer and love them, they are not going to understand it. And your actions will show who you are. All of this wisdom that Solomon has would be important for us in our lives today if we would take the time to listen. The last one of these that we'll go through in this section is verse 26, where it says, like a muddied spring or polluted fountain is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. I'm going to say it this way. Compromise of principles turns the stomach. If you say that you believe something, and yet you go a different direction, your words don't match what you're saying, that compromise will turn the stomach. So a muddied spring or a polluted fountain, if you drink that water, it'll make you sick. You know, when we went to Tanzania, we were told very clearly, you don't drink water from a fountain. You only drink bottled water. Make sure that you're careful when you wash your hands and then put your hands towards your mouth or something of that nature. We were very clear because of the bacteria that would be in that would cause us to get sick. Well, there on the last night that we were there, we were staying in a hotel, and there was an ice machine. And there were people that were just, oh, ice. We've not had ice in 10 days. Let's get some ice. Well, as we were wrapping up the meal, one of the folks that was there walked over to that ice machine and started doing some inspecting and came back and sat down and said, y'all, I got some bad news. I was like, what's that? Hope you enjoyed the ice. And everybody was sitting around the table. I was like, yeah, we did. There wasn't a filter on that ice machine. So we had been so good about not drinking the water, but we were poor when it came to tapping into that frozen water. And there was some sickness that came because of that. So that's what Solomon is getting home here. If you claim to be righteous and you hold the principles, don't compromise them. Because if you do, then others will view that as like a polluted fountain. The last thing here is verse 28. Through chapter 26 and verse 12. This is the focus of a fool. Look at verse 28. It says, a man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. This goes right back to the too much sweet. This goes right back to the aspect of someone that claims to be righteous, yet they compromise those principles, and it's as if they are a polluted fountain. These are things that we have to make sure we avoid. You know, we could talk about self-control. We could talk about how we need to avoid, you know, getting caught by sending the wrong people to do the wrong job. You could look in verse 6. But I really want to focus on verses 4 and 5 because they seem to be contradictory, but they're not. Solomon says, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. But then he says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. In other words, the first verse, verse 4 here, says that we should not fall into the verbal trap of arguing with a fool. Because a fool doesn't care about wisdom. A fool doesn't care about knowledge. A fool only wants to look good to others. So they will do some fancy-smancy debate tactics to do things to you to make you look foolish that would score some points, but they lose the argument in the long run. So in other words, don't fall into that verbal trap. But verse 5, where it says, answer a fool, you don't fall into the verbal trap, but you do expose the inconsistencies, and you do make them silent. That takes wisdom, not emotion. It takes wisdom in order to do that. The last thing, verses 7, verse 9, and verse 11. This is harsh statement. But Solomon says, like a lame man's legs which hang useless, is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Ouch! That hurts. I mean, that is vivid imagery that here is a lame man, someone that cannot get up and walk. His legs, in essence, are useless to him. That's what wisdom is to a fool. Look at verse 9. Like a thorn that goes deep into the hand of a drunkard is a proverb in the mouth of a fool. In other words, if you have someone that is drunk and a thorn that is deep into the skin, they're not really going to know. They're not really going to care because they're intoxicated. They are getting what they want. They have overindulged. Hey, man, everything is good. But when all of that wears off, the pain comes. Again, ouch. Verse 11. Like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. In other words, the fools don't learn. So they keep going back. And for me, that's just a disgusting image, but it's an image that should be burned in your mind, that wisdom prevents you from this. If you want to not be in these kinds of situations, what do you need? You need wisdom. And Solomon closes this section out by saying, do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than him. My friends, be very careful when you think you're right, because I will encapsulate this entire section, this first part of the collection, with this simple statement. You are never more wrong than when you know you are right. Let me say that again. You are never more wrong than when you know you are right. What that means is that there is pride in your heart. And when you've got pride, there are blind spots that you cannot see, so you will go to those sweet things too much. You will lose self-control. Instead of going in with humility, you will come in with a heart of pride. Instead of looking at, hey, what's the right word to say here? I'm right, and I'm going to say something that's going to hurt because I'm going to win this argument. That is where there's failure. That is where you show your lack of wisdom, because what did I say earlier? Actions. Your actions acknowledge who you are. If you don't like what you see in the mirror about who you are, you can change that because you define your moments. So my friends, make sure that that heart of pride is gone. Make sure that self-control is where it needs to be. Make sure that you're loving your enemies to show that there's wisdom within you. Make sure that you know who you can trust. Make sure that you are one that others can trust. And then finally, don't let wisdom be wasted in your life. Thank you for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back in the not too distant future, and you take care.